Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Azure Power's Management Update Conference Call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the management updates concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Vikas Bansal, Head Investor Relations at Azure Power. Thank you, and over to you, Mr. Bansal.
Thank you. Good morning, good evening, everyone, and thank you for joining us at a short notice. On Monday, the company issued press releases giving an update regarding some of the developments at the company. With me today are Chairman of the Board, Alan Rosling, Acting CEO, Rupesh Agrawal, our Chief Financial Officer, Pawan Kumar Agrawal. Alan will start the proceedings, giving you an update on the development. Please note our safe harbor statements are contained within our press releases and presentations, a copy of which is available on the investor section of our website at azurepower.com. I now hand over the call to Alan.
A very good morning to those of you joining from the US and North America, and a good evening to those of us in Asia. I'm sure you have seen the two press releases that Vikas referred to. You understand that we are constrained by what more we can disclose at this time. I know that this is likely to frustrate many of you, and frankly, it's not at all easy for us either. I can only assure you that the board and management are fully committed and working incredibly hard to address the issues we have in front of us and to be in a position as early as possible to put all this behind us. Since becoming chair last year, I've insisted on the highest standards of governance and transparency at Azure, and I have actively reached out to our investors at every opportunity. I know some of you have tried to contact me and Vikas and Pawan, and I really regret that we are in a position so that individual responses in the way that we would normally do are difficult for us. I have to say we really appreciate the support and understanding of our shareholders, our debt providers, the board, management, and of course our employees. As we said in the press notice, the board believes that Azure's underlying business remains fundamentally strong and the opportunity in the renewable business in India and the energy transition that India is going through is truly compelling. The business continues to trade as expected. Cash flows are in line with our plans and our external obligations are being serviced in the normal course. Unfortunately, as you know, the filing of our annual report for last financial year, FY22, will take some more time. We are working as hard as possible with the support of leading external advisors to close our annual accounts. I appreciate fully this is concerning for our investors, but at this point, the company is unable to give a firm timeline for submission of its FY22-20F. Let me now turn to the whistleblower issue that we referred to in the press note, which was received in May this year, an anonymous whistleblower allegation. The complaints, and there were three strands to the original complaint, alleged certain potential procedural irregularities and misconduct by a few employees at a single plant belonging to one of our subsidiaries. As part of the company's review of these allegations, we discovered deviations from safety and quality norms at the facility, and the company executive management immediately took action to implement mechanisms to remediate these health and safety issues, and in so doing, to strengthen our safety and quality protocols at this plant, but also across our other operations. Safety is genuinely paramount for us. We've got every board meeting since I joined with health and safety. We do not tolerate lapses from our high standards on safety, so that we can be confident that all of our employees return safely to their families each day after work. And then secondly, Azure's Audit Committee, with the assistance of legal counsel and forensic accounting support, carried out an investigation into another of the strands of the whistleblowers' allegations, and indeed identified evidence of manipulation of project-level data and information by certain employees. This is just unacceptable, and the company has implemented immediate remedial measures and has initiated the disclosure of such findings to the appropriate authorities. You know, now turning to our strong pipeline, you know that we have a strong pipeline of future projects, won and contracted. Indeed, in FY22, we commissioned our 600 megawatt ACE project plant for SECI in Rajasthan in India, which is the largest owned and operated single site project by any developer in the country, and I believe the largest in Asia outside China. However, regarding our PPAs amounting to 2.3 gigawatts under the manufacturing link tender of 4 gigawatts, we are aware that two public interest litigations, so-called PILs, have been filed in the High Court of Andhra Pradesh, which challenge various aspects of the manufacturing link tender. The PILs seek the court to quash the state regulator's approval for procurement capacity tied up with the Solar Corporation of India, so the Energy Corporation of India, second, a state-owned entity, which is our customer. The tariff adoption for the capacities by the central regulator, CRC, has also been made subject to the outcome of these PILs. The company is, of course, evaluating the impact of these PILs on our future business, but I stress that we are not party to this litigation. On the matter of our loss of our CEO, Harsh, I would like to re-emphasize what we said in the press note, that Harsh's resignation was unexpected and regrettable. I have to say I wish him well going forward in the place that he has now landed. However, I would like to introduce all of you to Rupesh Agarwal, our acting CEO. I have worked closely with Rupesh since he joined the company as a consultant some months ago and then was confirmed as our Chief Strategy and Commercial Officer 2 months ago. And I hope you will see that the company is being led by an unusually capable and experienced individual. Rupesh will be working closely with myself and the board to scale the business as soon as we overcome the immediate challenges facing us, and we can refocus our attention on our exciting growth agenda. Rupesh is backed by a very talented team, which I am delighted to spend time with, including a number of colleagues who are joining us this evening. Pawan, who I think most of you know, our CFO, Shweta, our new head of HR, and Kriti, our general counsel. So that said, I look forward to responding to the many questions you will have, but now I think it is a moment, Rupesh, for you to introduce yourself to our investor base. Thank you, and Rupesh, over to you.
Thanks, Alan. Hello, friends. Thank you for joining in. Thanks, Alan, for the introduction. Friends, I joined the company, as Alan mentioned, mid-July as the Chief Strategy and Commercial Officer. I have about two decades of leadership experience in asset development and strategy consulting, having advised leading utilities and private equity investors on developing and managing their clean tech investments in India. Previously, I've held leadership positions at Convergence Energy Services, a Government of India company, and also at Lightsource India, a solar developer. I've also worked with EY. More recently, I had a terrific learning experience running my own startup, a zero-emission electric mobility company, which pioneered India's first public electric bus route. Friends, I'd like to reassure you and all our stakeholders today that we are very focused on growing our business at this very exciting time in the Indian renewable energy market. We are enthused by the Indian government's commitment to energy transition and making India a leader in green clean energy. Though we discussed challenges that our company is facing today, I would like to reiterate that the company continues to operate in line with its business plans. Our cash flows and collections from customers continue in the ordinary course. The company continues to serve its debt payment obligations, and our liquidity position remains strong. We can take questions now. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will now begin with the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Participants may also note that we may not be able to take all questions because of time limitations. Ladies and gentlemen, in order to ensure that the management is able to address questions from all participants in the conference, please limit your questions to two per participant. Should you have a follow-up question, we would request you to rejoin the question queue. We will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Justin Clare from Roth Capital Partners. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking our questions. So first off here, I was just wondering, could you share what kind of project data and information was manipulated? Was this energy generation data or revenue or costs? And then just wanted to understand the scope of the issue. You know, how many projects may have had data manipulated? You know, was this one project or was this more widespread across multiple projects? And then are there implications here for your financial reporting? You know, could you have overstated revenues or earnings? And is there a risk that you may have to restate financials here?
Okay, Joss, thank you very much for the questions. The way we're going to do this is this is Alan, will direct questions at colleagues. So principal one will address questions to do with the finances and accounts. Rupesh will address commercial questions, and I will do governance questions. So, Joss, I think your question is principally about the, you know, the governance and the WB. So let me handle it in the first instance. First of all, this relates to a single project only. I am, as you'll understand, I'm sorry to keep falling back on this, but you'll understand the position we're in. I can't go into the details of the allegations and what we found and the inquiry because you can imagine the process we're going through and the next steps that we may have to do. What I can say is it relates to the whistleblower complaint, relates to a single project, a very small number of employees. I can't go into the details of exactly what we discovered. I'm afraid I regret that. There is, as far as we know, not a question of overstating past income. And I think I'd better stop there because you'll understand that this process has still got some legs to it.
Okay.
Do we have the next question, operator?
The next question.
Could I jump? Okay.
Mr. Clare, we would request you to rejoin the question queue.
Okay.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Eric Liu from Nomura. Please go ahead.
Thanks, management. I think I have a question on the RG2, I think the restricted group operational data. The following, you mentioned RG2 has generated 1,367 electricity units. But based on your another operating data, PLF is 21.4. So based on your operational capacity, this should generate 1,200 something. That seems to be a 10 to 15% deviation compared to what you mentioned about the electricity generation. And seems like if I also look at your first quarter to third quarter, fiscal 22, which is around 20% above, and then it feels like your 4Q indicator is around 17%. So could you let us know, is there any kind of a reason on the back of a 4Q drop, and then how do you explain this deviation? Thank you.
Okay. Eric, thank you. Thank you for that question. You're certainly on the ball. Pawan, perhaps you could handle this, please.
Sure, Alan. So we cannot provide as of now data more than that we have already published, including the corrections that have been filed subsequently. With respect to PLF and megawatt, the reasons of variations could be the entire megawatt may not be operating in full capacity. So there could be multiple reasons why you cannot simply take the megawatt and the PLF and derive it MU. This is just at a broad level we are suggesting. And also quarterly, again, because of seasonality and other reasons, quarterly also the PLF varies.
So just a follow-up on this question, because 4Q usually to be a high radiation quarter compared to 3Q and 2Q. So why it shows a drop instead?
For one, I think that's for you as well.
No, not sure if I got the question right, but I hope, first of all, I hope you're referring to the correct thing, that is 24.1% PLF. Not 24.1, not 21.4.
Yeah, sorry, but my question is on the 4Q. I mean, if I based on your first quarter to third quarter PLF, which is presented in the last quarter's presentation, and then based on 21.4 PLF, it indicated at 1,200. So it sounds like 4Q is a kind of 17%.
So that's what we're saying, that we have filed the corrected data. You can refer to the revised filing, and the data has been corrected in that.
Okay, got you. I come back to the queue if I have any further question.
Thank you, Eric.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Maheep Mandloi from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Hey, good evening together, India, and thanks for taking the questions. First, just on the whistleblower allegation, and understand the limited clarity can give at this stage. But could you just talk about what are the potential implications? Is it something where I could see fines from the Indian government or counterparties, or is it just the restatement, which is the risk here? And secondly, just for Rupesh, my question on strategy, as in Rupesh, you've been around for a few months here. So any clarity or any thoughts on the strategy for the business going forward here? Thanks.
Okay, so thank you, Mac. We've got two questions. Rupesh, if you could think about responding to the strategy question, let me just handle the whistleblower clarification. Look, at this point, we have found that our processes and our standards have been violated, and that's what we focus on. We refuse to have standards of compliance and behavior which falls below our processes and our ethics and our beliefs. The questions you go on to ask about the consequences of the robust way in which we are handling this, and the way we are coming forward to talk to appropriate authorities, that I can't answer at this point. The only thing we're focused on is doing the right thing, addressing what we've discovered, ensuring that no such thing can reoccur. And I apologize again that getting dragged into the details of this particular case is just beyond what we can do at this stage. Okay, so Rupesh, could you address the second question on the strategy opportunity?
Sure, thanks. So look, as a company, nothing is changing in our business strategy or our business standpoint. We remain confident of a growing business. And recently, last week we were shortlisted for one of the largest energy storage tenders under an auction. So we continue to do business as planned. We remain confident of growing our business. We are actively participating in opportunities that are available in the market. And we remain focused on our business to play a leading role in India's energy transition commitments.
Rupesh, if I could just supplement that, if you've finished your answer to me. Listen, I've been with the business a number of months, and I've spent a huge amount of time working with the management, Rupesh, since he joined, on the future strategy, because obviously the opportunity is large and complex. We have obviously some advantages. We are pioneers in the industry. We have a certain scale. We have traditionally had an ability to finance equity and debt. So we have done a lot of work on the choices that we need to make for a differentiated approach to the market, giving us the sorts of returns that today a company which is offshore listed and offshore owned, we need to deliver, which often is more demanding than some of our domestic competitors because of the country risk, the rupee risk, etc. So we have got a roadmap in place, which Rupesh has been working on since he joined us. The board has been actively engaged in, and the sort of blip that we're facing now, the challenges we're facing now, which I do not underestimate, I do not want to underscore how they are serious issues which we are taking seriously. But we need to look through them, we need to drive through them, we need to solve them so that we can get to that strategic opportunity that Rupesh is referring to. Okay, perhaps the next question.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Puneet from HSBC. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you so much for the call. My first question is, you guys talked about two things. One was misrepresentation of data, and second was the deviations in quality and safety norms. Does that relate to the same project so far, or are they separate projects? And if you can also comment on their materiality so far.
Puneet, I'm struggling to understand. Your line is not clear. So could you repeat? I don't know whether you've got a mic. Could you repeat the question so I can understand?
Okay, sure. Can you hear me well now?
Yes, he speaks loud and clearly. Sorry.
My bad. So my first question is, you've talked about two aspects here. One was misrepresentation of data, and second was deviation in quality and safety norms. Do they relate to the same project, or are there separate projects under question here? And if you can also comment on the materiality of these deviations and misrepresentation.
Okay. The materiality, I don't think I can at this stage for the same reasons I keep referring back to. And I apologize again for not being able to be as open and transparent as we would like to be. It is just too difficult, as you can imagine, with the position we're in. To be clear, there is we, like many companies, get whistleblower allegations and complaints from time to time. It's a system we built, and it is one of our checks and balances. So in many ways, it is a sign of positivity if one of our employees or somebody else uses our whistleblower system. Last year, we had a couple of whistleblower allegations, which we disclosed to the market, almost several of them, most of which we turned out not to have substance, but led us to review the processes and systems we have for handling whistleblowers. So in this case, we have a single whistleblower about a single project who made a number of separate allegations.
Okay.
The one was around health and safety at the site. and one was about the incorrect reporting upwards of information. The first one, as I said earlier on, about health and safety, when the process is when we get one of these whistleblower complaints, the audit committee chairman is immediately notified. Internal audit take a first look to see whether there might be substance. And if it is, we can deal with the matter either by dismissing it because it doesn't have any truth, or we handle it internally, we do so. Otherwise, the protocol is we need to have an independent third-party investigation. So in this case, on the health and safety, we determined ourselves immediately that there was substance to some of the things that the whistleblower was saying about the site. And it, we took immediate remedial action at that site, and indeed, as I said, cascaded the learning across, because health and safety is never, as you understand, a single thing. You keep going, because people are people, and, you know, standards, you know, people forget and don't do things, and you know, we all do it in our own daily lives. The second set of allegations around the data, because it was in the nature of an allegation of that nature, we immediately commissioned an independent party. Some of you have asked us on the emails why it has taken time since when the whistleblower submitted these complaints to us, concluding this part of the investigation, and disclosed to the market. Frankly, these things take time. To commission an independent law firm, for them to do their process, to interview, to go through all of the electronic information they need to do, it takes some time. So they are a single whistleblower with a number of strands, one of which we had to bring an independent party in and some forensics to get to the bottom of.
Yes, so single whistleblower and single project is what I should take it away from.
That's right. That's correct.
My second, if I can, is on the CEO departure. Is the CEO departure in any way linked to this? And number two, why is there no, you know, notice period in your CEO departure? Management transition often takes a bit of time, and both your previous CEOs left without notice, or at least the state was informed on the last day of their departure. If you can comment on that.
Yeah, sure. Okay, I think Bernie, this is again to me. The two CEOs that have left us in the last few months are entirely different cases.
Yeah.
In the case of Harsh Shah, he came to me with a very personal request to be released. I'm afraid, again, I'm going to have to say, for reasons of confidentiality and contract and my understanding with him, I cannot be drawn on his personal reasons. But you've probably seen where Harsh is has landed, and I wish him well. It is a management decision and a board decision in these cases as to how generously and swiftly one deals with it. If you have a management who wish to leave, sometimes, of course, you can enforce contract, and that's wise. And sometimes it is better to be swift about these things. In part because we had a bench strength. Rupesh was with us. The board had confidence in Rupesh. Our judgment was it was far better to be swift, generous, and quick in this transition process because, you know, we have a lot to do. We have these challenges we're talking about to deal with, you know, the closing the accounts and closing off this WB issue. And importantly, we've got to take the business forward. We've got recruitments to give. We've got projects to build. We've got more projects to bid for and win. And it is better very often to have a management team of the future rather than trying to retain somebody who's for whatever reason, of his own, has decided it is better for him to move on. So that is a judgment of the board and in a negotiation with the individual. And I apologize, I can't get into the details of why he made that decision. I'm constrained by my agreement with him.
Thank you.
Can we have the next question?
Yes, sir. Mr. Puneet, may we request that you return to the question queue for follow-up questions. The next question is from the line of Marcus Wong from Shorter Investment Management. Please go ahead.
Hi, management. I got a couple of questions. Firstly, in terms of, I guess you mentioned one of the whistleblower complaints is related to manipulation of data. But could I check in terms of your system-wise, wouldn't be everything be sort of like automated into some dashboard at HQ where basically it feeds real-time the information of all the plants? So how could it happen that some individual actor could just manipulate the data? Second question is relating to your access to onshore bank lines. Have you chatted with your onshore bankers, the REC equivalent, all that, since the announcement of you made 2 days ago, and access to onshore funding, how would that be affected going forward? Yeah. Thanks.
Okay. Marcus, thank you. There are two questions. For one, if you could prepare to answer the second one about the onshore banking arrangements. Let me just take the first one, which again relates to the WB. Hey, Marcus, it is very hard for me to get, if I begin to answer your question, I'll get myself in hot water. So I can only go back to saying, look, we've disclosed that we've had an issue. I can't get into the detail of exactly what it was in detail and so on, because this is, in process in terms of the follow-up actions, including dealing with the follow-up and the remedial actions connected with this. So I apologize. I cannot be drawn on the specifics of the case. We've revealed that we're taking immediate and strong action, and I think I need to stop there. Pawan, would you like to take Marcus's second question about banking?
Sure, Alan. So Azure has long-standing relationship with its debt providers, and we have taken initiatives of reaching out to our debt providers and brief them on the current developments.
Okay. Can we move to the next question?
Sure. The next question is from the line of Divakar Vijayvargiya from Alliance Bernstein. Please go ahead.
Hey, Alan. Look, thanks for taking this call and time to actually have this investor call. Very much appreciate this. I have two questions. First, on the last call, there was some chat or thoughts in terms of whether you guys could release the unaudited numbers, just to give some clarity. And, just to bed it down that, look, the operations are fine. So if you guys can actually talk about this when and if you guys are going to use the unaudited numbers. The second thing is, I do understand that this process is taking time. But, as an investor, what is the signal that is sending us? Because you cannot give us a timeline by which this process will be completed and you guys will be able to release the results. It just gives a sense that the problem is much bigger than what is being actually talked about. And does it impact your listing status on New York Stock Exchange? And by what is the hard deadline by which you guys need to publish the results before New York Stock Exchange listing comes into question?
Okay, so there's a bunch of questions there, which largely for one is for you about why we weren't able to release unaudited numbers. Any consequences on operations and the results and the cash flow from the operations, and anything we can say on the timing of the audit. Just, if I may take the listing question before Pawan answers those first three points. Listen, we are working as hard as we can to get the audit out. Pawan will touch on this in a second. I think most of you know what the NYSE rules are on this, and the NYSE obviously has discretion and processes. I can only say that at the moment the question of the listing has not arisen. That does not mean, obviously, we're not very conscious that we have a responsibility to our investors and to our listing rules to fulfill the audit and filing requirements. We take that extremely seriously. I think I better stop there and ask Pawan to talk about those first three questions, the unaudited numbers, effect on operations, and the time regarding the audit. Pawan?
Sure, Alan. So, Diwakar, as you said, as of now, we are not in a position to give you any sense on the likely timeline by which we can file 20-F. As you said, our review of control and compliance framework is still going on. Our business continues to remain, our operating portfolio continues to remain operational in a normal way. Our cash flows and then our receivables and everything is in line with budget and estimates. So there is no surprise around that. On unaudited financials, yes, we did mention during the last call that we are evaluating the possibility of releasing unaudited key headline numbers if possible. So, but as of now, we are not there.
Sorry, I need to follow this up, and this is not part of the question, but like, what's stopping you from releasing the unaudited numbers? I mean, you know, sometimes I can understand the processes, but unaudited numbers for March 2022, where is the legal hurdle, yeah, regulatory hurdle, which is stopping you from releasing that number?
Diwakar, you're obviously a highly experienced analyst. You almost certainly, you know, qualified financially. I don't know if you're a CA or not. I think you probably understand the answer to your own question. It is obviously very difficult for the board to sign off and to release numbers that, you know, that are still in, need to be signed off. So we would love to release information to the market. But for one, as a responsible CFO, the board, the audit committee all have responsibilities. I think you understand exactly the position that we, we're dealing with. All I can say again is we will get this done as rapidly as we can, even though we are not today in a position to tell you exactly when. It's, we obviously have some processes to go through to get there. Next question, perhaps, please.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Prapti from BlackRock. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, thank you. I hope I'm audible. I mean, I just have a couple of follow-ups from the past. I understand the company cannot give a lot of details on the data manipulation and safety norms. What I want to understand is by when can we expect more clarity on if not the financials, but on these items, on in the likes of the site that is impacted because of data manipulation, the safety norms, and what measures did the company take? And as a follow-up to that is that I understand this whistleblower came in the month of May 2022. So was there a thorough review of all the other plants, keeping this in mind of the data manipulation issue that happened at one of the sites which the management is saying? So was there a thorough review of the other sites to prevent any such issues?
Okay, Bertie, thanks for those questions. You know exactly what I'm going to say on the first question about by when. And I know I'm sounding like a broken record. I know I'm sounding, you know, I'm very frustrated. I'm as frustrated as you are that I can't answer your question directly. We will come to you. We will sign these accounts, get them filed, and disclose everything as swiftly as we can. I think that is all we can say. On the timeline and assurance that it is relating to a single plant only. Yes, of course, those questions were top of mind as soon as we got into these issues. The health and safety, I think I've already mentioned. You know, as soon as we found issues with one of our operations, we have taken swift action to reinforce the message on health and safety, to reinforce our processes, our controls on health and safety, our compliance standards around this. We are assuring that senior management, the board, myself, visit plants unexpectedly or expectedly. We walk around. The first thing we do on every site, the first thing we do at every board meeting is talk about health and safety. We are using all the controls you can imagine, including the advisors of various sorts, to give us assurance that the systems in the rest of the operations don't suffer similar issues. On the specific question you're asking us to on the data side, again, I'm afraid I can't be drawn because that is you know, still at a point that I can't comment further than what we disclosed in the PM, and I apologize again for that.
Sure, okay. And just to confirm, is this an under-construction plant that is being discussed or an operational plant?
Okay, again, I can't comment on identifying the specific plant.
Okay, no worries. And maybe just one last question. Right. How informed are your shareholders on, you know, in terms of timelines of getting this to your shareholders? How well informed are the shareholders of the entire, especially the manipulation issue and what are their, how well informed they are about all these issues?
By our shareholders, you're referring to the investors on this call, or are you talking about the large shareholders who are represented on our board? And obviously, investors on this call, you know, like, you know, other stakeholders, we have to be, you know, disclose everything to everybody at the same time, the same level of details under the constraints we're facing. The board, which is made up of independents and nominees, the board is fully appraised and fully engaged and deeply concerned about all those. But I separate the board, whoever their backgrounds may be, whether they're independents or nominees, from shareholders. Obviously, the board has insight into everything. The audit committee is driving much of this process alongside the executive management. Okay, perhaps we could have the next question, please.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Imtiaz Shefuddin from Barclays. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much for the opportunity. I just want to follow up from Sapti's question earlier. Here I'm referring to CPDQ and OMERS. What is their thought process of what's going on right now? And also just to follow up on the last call, you had the representative from CPDQ. I remember it was Mr. Malhotra who was on the call when we had the call that was hosted by the previous CEO, Mr. Harsh. This time around, we don't seem to have any representative from CPDQ. So perhaps you could give some clarity in terms of what is CPDQ and OMERS thinking behind, you know, the current situation. That's my first question. And my second question is relating to, you mentioned that your onshore bankers, you know, they know what's going on. Can you just comment whether there is any potential breach of covenants on your loans, perhaps not at the RG level, but at the holdco level? Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for those two questions. I'll take the first one. And for one, you take the second one on the bankers. Listen, Imtiaz, we cannot, as a company, speak for our shareholders, whoever they are. The board I can speak for because I chair the board and I spend a lot of time with all of our directors. And I appreciate the way that they have gathered round and put in time to help us, advise us, support us at a time when the company is going through, you know, an unexpected and unpredicted issue. But you know, any questions for them qua shareholders and as institutions, we cannot answer. You know, obviously, you understand that. So, for one, perhaps you could address the banking question.
Sure. So, Azure has long-standing relationship with the provider, including lenders, and then we have taken initiatives of reaching out to them and then brief them on the current developments.
Thank you.
And I guess, the other thing perhaps we can assure you is that we said before, we said in the PM, we continue to service all of our obligations, debt obligations and others, on time in full. Okay. Could we have the next question, please?
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Varun Ahuja from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the time. So I know you can't mention a lot of questions. I'm not. I hope my questions will not lead to repeating the statement. But can I confirm explicitly the generation numbers that you've mentioned, 995 for RG1 and 1367? That is that you have utmost confidence that that is the real generation number. And after whatever data manipulation allegations have been there, that has been cleaned up, and the management is completely confident that the RG1 and 2 generation is that. So if you can at least comment on that, that's number one. Number two, Alan, it's more for you. The sequence of events, the way it has happened, it clearly is giving a signal to the market that the issue is significantly bigger than what hopefully it actually is. So my question for you is more on the governance part, that, Harsh coming in after CEO and COO left, clearly he would have at least, been in the know-how, or should have been in the know-how as to what are the implications, because he joined in July and the whistleblower allegation was in May. So despite that, he would naturally, I presume, would have been aware of this issue. So my question on that governance front is, when Harsh left, it seems like he was, is the actual issue much bigger than what he thought at the time of his joining? And then just on that, why was this whistleblower issue not highlighted just a week back when he did the call, and it was always said that the results delays because of the 5-year status change, when actually this PIL and this whistleblower issue should have been mentioned then and there itself? So this sequence of events from a governance perspective is creating a lot of panic in the market. Alan, if you could comment on that. So those would be my questions. Thanks.
Sure. Okay. So again, for one, if you can prepare yourself to answer on the generation numbers and the confidence levels that we have on our systems, processes, and controls, let me address the governance challenge. Listen, Vern, we cannot comment until an investigation is complete. I think you'll understand. So the part of the whistleblower complaint which related to wrongful treatment of information was subject to a independent third-party legal process commissioned from a major law firm. And until that exercise reports back, obviously we can't disclose anything about it. And we can't take action. So we are taking the first opportunity since the delivery of that work by the independent investigation to update you as our shareholders. Had, of course, we been in a normal course, we'd been disclosing it in a 20F, but sadly that is not the case. That is not what we'd hoped to be the case. But we're taking the first opportunity to disclose that this has happened. But also, we're telling you that we've taken action, both on the health and safety thing, which troubled me personally because, I come from a culture where this really, really matters. And in Azure, it really, really matters. But also the question of employees who have fallen short of our standards. So the investigation had a list of recommendations. We have action with speed. So I think if you've been through this sort of thing in a company, you'd understand that these things do unfortunately take time if you're commissioning third parties to get involved. For one, now could you address the generation issue and the grip we have on the quality and control on our numbers?
Sure, Alan. Yeah, Varun. So the generation number, million units, are mentioned for both the green box. They are correct to the best of our knowledge, and we are confident of those numbers. There was some typo in the PLF percentage, which we got subsequently corrected and uploaded. But million units, the number that you are referring to, Varun, is correct.
Maybe I can just add something else from a board point of view. I'm sorry, the chairman is speaking too much, and I should have management speak more. But we as a board are really engaged and riled and upset and deeply engaged with this issue. it is clear that we need, as a company, to look at ourselves in a very hard way and ensure that the sorts of questions you're asking about our controls, we can answer with speed and confidence. I'm not at all saying that we can't. I'm just saying that we have a responsibility as a board, and we take that responsibility very, very seriously. So I'm sure you can imagine that, for one, it's working extremely hard to ensure that everything is world-class and that we are taking advice from third parties to ensure that the board has confidence in everything that management is doing, saying, and proposing to do into the future. So it is, you know, that there is a lot of action, learning, reflection, that is always involved in a company, but particularly at a time like this. Next question, perhaps, please.
Ladies and gentlemen, due to time limitations, we will be able to take last two questions. The next question is from the line of Douglas Turnbull from Invesco. Please go ahead.
Thanks very much, guys. Can I ask just to slightly change the topic a little bit about the public interest litigation? Am I reading it correctly that this throws up in the air the entirety of the manufacturing link tender and also the tariffs that you've agreed for parts of that subsequently with SECI? And perhaps you could help give a bit of, I don't know, context or color around that. Is this something that is more sort of run-of-the-mill that you'd expect to have occurred and is a bit of a speed bump, or is this something which has come way out of left field and really does throw things back up in the air? That's my first question. Some help on that would be great.
Okay. Daga, let me take this, even though Akriti is here and she is much more conscious of the Indian legal system than I am. But to answer your question, PIL relates to Andhra Pradesh only. And so it is a portion of our 4-gate manufacturing link project because it has been filed in the High Court of Andhra Pradesh. So it relates to PPAs and then it relates to the PSAs, in other words, the on-selling from SECI to the off-takers at a state level within the state of Andhra Pradesh only. Now, PILs generally, I mean, India is, as you know, an incredibly vibrant and exciting democracy, and the legal system is one of the pillars of that democracy. The PIL, the public interest litigation, is a an interesting form where third parties and concerned citizens are able to raise points of law in a way which perhaps other jurisdictions don't have. I'm no expert on it. I can't comment on it. But obviously, because this has been raised, it relates to part of our bigger project, to a portion of the project. And, you know, we, because we're not party to the litigation, we're at this point, you know, unclear. We're taking advice, but the advice, of course, can't predict what may happen, you know, through a independent legal system.
Thank you.
Doug, do you have a follow-on, or can I ask the next question?
I do have one other question, if I may, which is, perhaps you could remind us of what either financing or refinancing requirements we have coming up over the next couple of months, couple of quarters, what cash on hand we would have to potentially deal with that, given that, you know, bonds are trading now and what the signals the market is saying. I'm quite concerned as to how we would be able to deal with new financing required for new projects coming up and or refinancings that may be coming soon.
Okay, so for one, that's clearly a question for you around refinancing.
Sure. So I just now think our finances are under audit. We are not in a position to comment on numbers. For the green bond that we talk about, green bonds are not due for refinancing anytime soon. It's in 2024 and 2026.
Okay, fine. And the comment you've made a couple of times on having just as fully briefed your onshore debt providers, I guess there's no more color you can give us in terms of how they've responded to that briefing.
Sorry, I didn't get it. Can you repeat the question, please?
You said a couple of times that you have been briefing the debt providers onshore with whom you have a long-standing relationship. Can you give us any color on their response to that briefing and ultimately the availability of onshore financing, whether that has been, if you expect that to have been impacted at all?
So we did this disclosure press release a couple of days back, and we are in the process of reaching out to all the lenders and updating them on the current developments. As of now, we are not in a position to comment anything more than that.
Doug, if I can add, you know our business well. You understand that essentially we are a business in the that uses project finance. And obviously in project financing, there are all sorts of parameters and risks that any lender looks at. But the prime thing they look at is the offtake risk, the offtaker risk, the payment risk. And you'll notice the one thing that makes Azure different from most of our competitors, the mix of our business, which is heavily skewed towards central entities rather than to SEBs. We have some SEBs, but they are a small portion of our portfolio. So our principal offtaker risk is central government and its entities, particularly SECI. And that is the kind of first building block of a project finance operation. Okay. Yeah. Operator, is there a further question?
Yes, sir. The next question is from the line of Matthias Vimali from Blue Bay. Please go ahead.
Hi, Alan. Thank you very much for the call. I know it's been extensive. Question is, if you could just, as a form of double checking and confirming, the one project that has been subject to the whistleblower does not form part of any of the two bond issuing restricted groups. That will be my one and only question, please.
Okay. Again, we don't identify the individual project for reasons that I've gone through, but for one, do you want to address this particular question about the RG?
What's the
specific
question around
RG? The question is to give assurance that the project, and I think I've already said to be confident about the project, where we have the whistleblower is not within the RG portfolio.
So we are in discussion with that project specific lenders, and working with them to address their concerns. But as Alan said, we're not in a position to comment which specific project is that.
But just to be clear, any lenders involved in the project where we have this issue, we have reached out to.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Matthias.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question for today. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Alan Rosling for closing comments.
Okay. Look, thank you all for your time and patience. We, the management, we, the board, we, the employees of Azure, we know the concerns that you have and we share around the developments that we've been discussing today. And I just can reiterate, the board takes these matters very seriously, but also that our underlying faith and belief in the fundamental strengths of this company, the management team, and the opportunity continues, and we believe the business is on track to realize those. We, of course, have challenges that we've been talking about today. Challenges of not being able to tell you everything that we would like to, including disclosing numbers and all the things we've been discussing today. And again, I apologize. We would like to be as transparent as we can, but I think you all are smart enough and experienced enough to know the sorts of constraints that we are under. Let me just finish by saying, look, we will get through this. We have a management team of bench strength to take us through. We have a board that's supportive.
and we have an opportunity in front of us in the transition, energy transition in India and renewable power in India that remains very, very exciting. So let me stop there and hand it back to the operator with thanks to all of you for joining this evening.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Azure Power, that concludes this conference call. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.